deserts to the sea, from the mountains to the snow, you are tuned in to the Johnny Punish Show, produced by the Veterans Today Network and BTN Radio, brought to you by HireVeterans.com, America's job board for U.S. veterans. Let's get this show rockin'!
I spent all my years fighting for a place in the sun.
And I hit the okay, this is the Johnny Punish Show, and I'm on with Sammy Jadala. He is currently in Washington, D.C. Is that correct, Sammy?
Yes, correct.
Perfect.
Hello, everybody.
Great. We're happy to have you on. And today we're going to discuss the Iran nuke deal. Yesterday, there was a vote in Congress. And it really, really appears that AIPAC, which is the foreign lobby unit posing as an American lobby, that has lost a tremendous, what I think might be the greatest loss in their history. And that's why I've asked Sammy to come on to discuss it. Sammy, please give me your impressions of what actually happened over the last 30, 45 days, and how did AIPAC fit into all this?
Well, I tell you, it was very interesting that the AIPAC pushed the Republican Congress to vote on the issue on September 11th, which was no accident. I think that they wanted to remind everybody of the terrorist attack on New York. And of course, you know, the Congress or the House of Representatives have no constitutional say-so on any foreign agreement or negotiation. So it was just in any treaties, it's only the Senate that decides on the issue. But the Republican Congress and AIPAC, they wanted to kind of embarrass Obama and embarrass the Republican and to force the Democrats to make a decision on the issue of the Iran deal. So they pushed for three votes in the last couple of days, and they lost, actually, because, you know, it was only just to show embarrassment, nothing more, knowing that they have no say-so whatsoever on the Iran deal. It's only the Senate that makes the decision. That's the Constitution.
Wow. Okay, so this is a really big deal.
Yeah. I mean, actually, it's no constitutional big deal because it means nothing. However, for public relations, it was a big deal. And I think that they got dunk on their face.
Wow. That's a big deal. When I look at the history of U.S. presidents fighting back and pushing back against AIPAC, I know there's been a lot of presidents that privately have said they can't stand it, they're sick of it, they wish they could do something about it, and no one ever seems to do anything about it. But this is the first time that I can remember, and I could be wrong, so I want you to tell me and our listeners, but this is the first time where a U.S. president pushed back enough and basically defeated them.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, I want to remind everybody what happened when President Bush Sr., when the Israelis, they asked for, I think it was about $10 billion in loan guarantees. And the was having a tough time, you know, with the funding. And he did not give in to the Israelis. And the Israelis, they pushed very hard. And he said, well, look, you know, I'm the president of the United States. I'm standing alone. So everybody was on the side of Israel, and very few people were on the side of the president when it's come to funding Israel. So President Obama did not really take on the Israeli lobby. What he did is that he went to the American people and not only to the Israeli lobby and to the Jewish organization. It's true that President Obama made an effort to speak to the Jewish organization. You know, he invited a number of rabbis to the White House. He had his aides meet with a number of significant Jewish organizations to try to placate them and try to get their support. But, however, I think that the president mustered the courage to really speak out on the issue when he went to the American University in Washington, D.C. And he gave perhaps the most detailed and, I would say, authoritative speech on the Iran deal that nobody could argue against it. And I think it has a significant, that speech itself has a significant impact on the American public, even though I think that the American public was somehow, not really caring much. It's only the Israeli lobby that really perhaps was the strongest voice on the issue of the Iran deal. And, more senators the other day came out for the deal. However, we need to keep in mind that even though the president was able to muster the number of senators to override any veto that the majority of senators, they voted against the deal. And this is, I think, a significant issue, that the majority of the Senate is against the deal while the minority of the Senate is for the deal. So the president, President Obama, was able to gather around 37 senators to make sure that he has the insurance that if he veto the deal, that he will not be overridden by the Senate. And in a way, I think that we should not really discount the power and influence of AIPAC and the Jewish groups in the, the Zionist group in Congress.
Yeah, because there are Jewish groups like, I believe it's, is it JT?
J Street.
Who's actually for the deal.
Yeah. I mean, JC, J Street, they consider them, it's a Zionist organization anyway, but they are for a peace agreement between the Palestinians and the Israelis. They are for a two-state solution, and they were able to spend about between $2 to $3 million in support of the deal, when AIPAC was able to muster between $20 and $30 million against the deal, huh?
Yeah, were they the ones funding all those weird commercials that we saw on television? Stop the Iran deal! Stop.
Yes. Yeah, you can see it. On Twitter, on Facebook, everywhere. I mean, they just blanket the media with their advertisement, and they have the money. You know, the money has been raised by the major funders of AIPAC, and the funding for AIPAC comes from the gambling and the prostitution and the pimping money of Las Vegas.
Would that be Sheldon Adelson?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that saddens me. I don't know if you know this, Sammy, but I went to high school in Las Vegas and university there. So you're talking about my kind of hometown, so it's pretty embarrassing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it seemed that, what happens in Vegas does not stay in Vegas, huh?
So is that really where it's all come from?
Yeah, most of the money comes from Adelson, and also come from Haim Saban, who is one of the main sponsor of Hillary Clinton, huh?
Wow.
I mean, so, he is the, Haim Saban of the Brookings, he is the sponsor of Hillary Clinton campaign for the presidency.
And that's why you see her constantly being pro-Israel.
Of course. The other day she came out with that she will, ensure that there is total funding for any Israeli projects. Of course, she has to buy her way through. But I don't think, contrary to, I just read the article by Rosenberg and the Nation, okay, MJ Rosenberg, where he said that AIPAC spent millions of dollars to defeat the Iran deal. Instead, it may have destroyed itself. Well, I take an issue with that. I think that AIPAC continued to be a significant foreign lobby organization. It has a hold on Congress. It's very powerful. It has hundreds, if not thousands, of volunteers who are working in Congress. So, you know, it plays a significant role and continue to play a significant role. And I don't think Israel is the issue. It is the control and power of Congress. That's what APEC is all about. It has nothing, I mean, it has something to do with Israel. But I think that it wants to make sure that it has the funding from the major Jewish Zionist sources to have and to keep control over Congress and the politics of the United States, which is really endangering our national security, you know.
Absolutely. So back to the historical perspective, is this the first time AIPAC's been solidly defeated, even though they put a gazillion dollars into it? This seems kind of historic. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think this may be a crack in the wall. And I think that, you know, there will be a wake-up call for all Americans to really once and for all defeat this organization and put it out of business as an American lobby, when in fact it's really a foreign lobby and it should be registered as a foreign agent. And the interesting thing is that, you know, AIPAC is funded not by your average Jewish guy, okay? It's really funded by a very rich and powerful, maybe 100,000 of the Jews, when in fact we have about 7 million Jews in America. So not all Jews are...
Sounds like America is the promised land, not Israel.
Yeah, it's true. But I mean, the thing about it that, you know, we have to keep in mind that the majority of Jews don't support AIPAC. The majority of Jews are Americans, you know, they support America. And I think that there has been a number of community leaders, Jewish leaders in Miami, in New York, and Los Angeles, who came out in support of the Iran deal. So the thing about it that, you know, AIPAC does not speak for all the Jews of America.
So who are they AIPAC speaking for?
Speaks for Israel, and it speaks for a minority of Jews in America.
Does that also include some global Zionists that are around the world?
Oh, yeah, for sure, you know, but I think that the funding for AIPAC comes from within the United States. And, okay. You know, there's a lot of very rich Zionists in America. I mean, you know, they are multi-billionaires and they keep the funding for AIPAC. So, you know, 100,000, really, I mean, you talk about the membership is only about 100,000 Jews American.
That's not very many.
Of Jews what we have in America, huh?
Right. That's absolutely true. I mean, I know I have a lot of friends that are Jewish and none of them are members of AIPAC and they don't even know anything about it. So it's strange, you know.
Exactly. So, you know, I mean, I think it's wrong and it's an insult to the American Jewish community who are committed to America and who are Americans before they are Zionist, and they may care about Israel. And, you know, I mean, I think that they have a right to care about Israel as Jews, but they are not a subscriber to the strong arm tactics of AIPAC.
Right. Now we still see AIPAC got, was it 50 plus senators to vote against this deal?
About 60 senators actually. Huh?
60. Okay. So still, I mean, they're entrenched. This is not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, no. I think that it's premature to call AIPAC is finished, huh?
Right.
No, I think.
But Obama, the Obama administration did kick him in the head, so to speak. I mean, this was a big deal that Obama looked him right in the eye and said, "No, we're not going your way."
Well, I think that perhaps this is the most significant, powerful stand of President Obama. I think that it will go down in history as one of his biggest achievement.
Wow, that's huge. I mean, we go all the way from Truman I'm sorry, what?
I mean, you know, the thing about it that I don't know what's the big issue about the Iran nuclear deal when, in fact, Iran never had any intention to produce weapon, unlike Israel that has about 250 nuclear weapons. It has the missiles to carry it all the way to the United States. It has the submarine capable of doing it. And the thing about it, that it's the only country in the Middle East that has nuclear bombs. And nobody talk about it, as you can see from the media. Everyone talk about the potential or the possibility that Iran may acquire nuclear weapons, when in fact, nobody talk about Israel having 250 bombs. And keep in mind that in 1960s, during the Johnson administration, Israel, and a report came out, and I published it in my article, a report came out recently to confirm that Israel stole nuclear weapon materials from the Apollo plant in Pennsylvania. And you know what? There was never an investigation about it. Johnson just made sure that this issue is hidden from the public, not to embarrass our allies, Israel.
Well, isn't that something?
So, yeah, and you know what? Even more interesting is that Iran did not attack the United States. We shot down an Iranian airliner over the Gulf, killing about 265 people. Okay, we brought the Shah. We reimposed the Shah on Iran. Iran did not. Yes, it's true that they kept 44 American hostage for 400 days, but unlike Israel, which killed American sailors. Okay, I'm sure that everybody remember this.
USS Liberty.
Okay. And they spied on us. And yet nobody cared to talk about it. They only talk about Iran as the enemy, when in fact Iran is not the enemy.
Yeah, that's really amazing. In fact, with the nuclear bombs in Israel, they're not even under IEA. The nuclear group inspection.
They did not sign the non-proliferation agreement.
And they're just by themselves with nukes and nobody monitors them.
Yes, yes. And, I think there are some reports that even some American officials, they passed on some bombs to Israel during the Bush and Cheney administration. Huh?
Yeah, this is amazing. So what we're dealing with is a crazy situation. The news media in America is still promoting Iran as some sort of terrorist organization, when in reality, it's Israel that's been circumventing the laws and doing all crazy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you have to keep in mind the following, that, Iran in its 3,000-year history did not really attack anybody. And in fact, I'm not, we need to keep in mind that it was...
Do you mean Iran in 300 years or 3,000?
3,000 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Almost, yeah. I mean, from the old days, the days of the Persian Empire, of course, there was war, they went all the way to Greece and Alexander went to Iran and everything else. But in modern time, Iran did not attack anybody, okay? It did not invade any country. And it was the Iraqis, Saddam Hussein, at the behest of America and the Reagan administration, that went to war immediately after the declaration of the Islamic State of Iran, okay? Mm-hmm. And supported by the Arabs. And so, now Iran is, I have to take a moment to say that what Iran is doing now in Syria and Yemen is not really a very good thing. I mean, I think it's destabilizing the regime there. And I know that maybe some people will take an exception about Iran's support of the Assad, but I'm not one of those people who support the Assad regime. Mm-hmm. Okay, but nevertheless, Iran did not really attack any American interest. It was Israel that attacked American interest, Israel that killed American soldier, Israel that injured American soldier, Israel that spied on us.
And so how can we further extricate this host out of the American political system. I mean, clearly Obama kicked him in the head, and this is going to be a big victory for the Obama administration. And of course, AIPAC's going to suffer. Although I did hear that behind the scenes, there were deals made where Israel's going to get a lot more money to make sure this deal goes through.
You know, frankly speaking, I think, you know, Israel is not worried about Iran acquiring the nuclear bomb because they have 250 of them.
Right.
And Iran does not have the capabilities of attacking Israel with nuclear bomb because it does not have the missiles to carry it. Israel does have the means to deliver nuclear bombs all the way to the United States. What Israel and Netanyahu and the Zionist lobby and AIPAC are interested in is blackmailing America into more money for Israel. Mm. So watch out. Be sure that tens of billions of dollars of taxpayer dollars will go to Israel in a very, very short time as a compensation for the passing of the Iran deal. So the Iran deal is not a windfall for America. It's really a windfall for Israel more than Iran.
Well, the detractors will say that Iran's getting $100 gazillion dollars out of this deal, when in fact they're really getting their money back that's been confiscated by the United States.
It's their money, for God's sake.
Yeah, I know. But this is what they say. They'll go around telling everybody that we're sending them $100 billion.
Windfall. Iran is not getting money from the taxpayers. Iran is getting their own money. Frozen money.
And Israel what is Israel going to get out of this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Iran, what Iran is if it gets the money, and I doubt it if it's going to be $100 billion, you know, maybe in the tune to about $50 billion. But Iran needs to develop its economy. It needs, you know, to invest in its local infrastructure. It needs to invest in education. It needs to invest in housing. So Iran will not use this right here to build a big, powerful military, huh?
Okay. Now, with Israel, what are they getting out of this? I heard they're getting double the amount of money this year in actual cash and also military hardware.
Well, be sure that Israel will get at least $10, $15 billion outright.
And that comes from U.S. taxpayers.
Of course. Of course.
This at a time where Republicans are complaining, Democrats are complaining.
We are the milking cow, man. We are the milking cow for Israel.
Yeah, but this frustrates me because I speak to average Americans all the time, and their concerns are really education. They're tired of their children getting loaned up to the T just to go to college. They have problems with jobs, lower paying jobs. You know, this is an issue. But yet we're exporting our money to these people, and we don't even know what we're getting out of it. What do we get for our money with Israel?
Israel has a better median income than most Americans. The average median income of an Israeli is about $40,000 a year. And they have Social Security. They have health care. They have better social services than us in America. And we are giving Israel more money every year.
This is unbelievable. This is a criminal crime.
5 million people under poverty line. We have 40 million people needing urgent help with housing and with education and with food. And we have about 2 million children undernourished in our America.
This is the real crime that needs to be exposed. Why are we doing this? And every time I ask the question to Americans, can you please tell me what Israel is giving to the United States? Why are we giving them billions and billions? What do we get out of it? And my answer that I always get is, they don't know. Nobody seems
to know. Well, of course they don't know because they have no means to know. Because the media is censoring all this information. You don't hear this... the debate on CNN or CNBC or CBS or Fox News, none of it. It's a good thing that we have the internet, you know. that allows the American people to search and find the truth. But don't depend on the mainstream American media to tell the American people the truth.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I always encourage my friends to stop watching mainstream media and turn on alternative media because it's ridiculous. We need to find out. Our American listeners right now need to ask that question. If you're investing $10 billion on Israel, what are you getting back? And well, if you can't answer the question, then stop giving them your money.
But you know, the thing about it, that the American voters, they have to ask members of Congress in their district how much money they voted for Israel and how much money they voted for their own district. And you will see the big difference.
Wow, that's a big question.
I mean, it's a big difference. Wow. You will see that if they bring into their district a few million dollars, they make such a big issue of it. And yet, when they vote by a voice vote, billions of dollars to Israel, okay, nobody talk about it. Hold our congressmen and congresswomen liable for the money that they send to Israel when, in fact, that money should go to their own district.
Now, we see the age of Bernie Sanders. He's not putting a lot of money into his campaign, but yet he's leading Hillary Clinton in the polls in Iowa and in New Hampshire. Could this be the age where the American Republic finally reject the big money that's being spent on Hillary and the big money that's being spent on Jeb? Is this the age where it does happen? Is this the time?
Well, I think, frankly speaking, I really think that the time of the big money will come to an end very soon. I did a research and for an article I wrote a few months back or maybe more about the last presidential election. And you know, the total cost of the presidential and senatorial and local election was about $3.5 billion. Could you imagine that?
Wow. That's
$3.5 billion.
It's unconscionable.
To make these politicians, okay, the politicians don't speak to us. You know, it's the advertisement that speak to us. So they get somebody who's a smart, cocky guys, you know, and they concocted certain, 30-second ads, and they sell the candidates like a soapbox.
Right. But do you think this is the time? Is it 2016 when it finally gets rejected? Are we going to see a President Bernie Sanders? Or, on the Republican side, there's a Trump, but he's a billionaire.
I wish that Bernie Sanders will win. And I think that I'm voting for him, even though I don't vote for Democrats or Republican, but I'm independent. But I think that Bernie Sanders is our hope. And, you know, the thing about it, that we need a liberalization of our ideas. You know, we have been beholding to conservative issues for a long time. Well, maybe now is the age of liberalism. There is nothing wrong with being liberal. You know, I mean, being liberal does not mean that you just, you know, you let the country go to hell. No. Being liberal means that you take care of people, you take care of the issues, you put a stop to Wall Street power, you put these crooks in jail, okay, as President Obama the other day proposed, okay, or the Justice Department proposed. Well, you know, it was too late.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Wall Street ripped America apart. They took us to the cleaners.
Yeah, don't get me started on that. I mean, here I am discussing with my American friends. They're telling me about the Mexicans who are taking their jobs, and I keep telling them, are you out of your freaking mind? Do you know who robbed you? Look, take a look at your pants. Look who's got their hand in your pocket. Believe me, it's not the guy that's getting paid $2 an hour. Believe me,
exactly.
It's not him. That's ridiculous.
Well, I tell you, I mean, you know, one thing we have to look at. Okay, since the Republican or since the Bush administration, the first Bush and Clinton administration, we lost 5.5 million industrial jobs forever. Manufacturing jobs.
Right.
And the thing about it, that when you think about it, before Walmart came about and became a major power, economic power in this country, they put out of business almost 500,000 small businesses in small town America. That was employing maybe about 1 million others. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, all this money, all these people that been put out of business is concentrated, all this billions of dollars is concentrated in one family, you know? A 20-member family, they have about maybe $200 billion. When in fact, before Walmart came about, okay, it was, you know, distributed among 500,000 business owners.
Right.
And now I live in Washington, D.C., and I go, we have a Tyson Corner, which is a very, very premium shopping district. And, you know, who goes to the big shops, the brand name? It's the Chinese. The Americans, they end up shopping at Walmart and Target. And the Chinese, they end up shopping at the big names.
Yeah, that's a big, big change we over made, the last 20 years.
We made the Chinese billionaires, and we made our people, you know, minimum wage.
Right. That's the big issue right now, is really what's going on in America. How do we get America back, the middle class, return it back? I mean, that's the real question.
Well, I'll tell you, yeah. I mean, you know, everybody tell you, well, you know, they want to go after Wall Street. Well, do you know that American corporation, they have more than $3 trillion parked outside America in profit?
Absolutely, yeah. They went global while they asked Americans to stay national.
Yeah, I mean, it was the Congress, you know. I mean, we have to blame the Congress for it. The Congress allows companies to park the money outside. The Congress concluded, you know, agreements like NAFTA and other things that took away our jobs. If you go to North Carolina, you see so many factories closed, you know. North Carolina used to be the textile Mecca, and it used to be the manufacturing for, you know, furniture, right? Mm-hmm. Well, there are many of these factories are closed.
Yeah, well, to
and
me,
we say, well, that, you know, that's we want the, to go,
what I was saying is that's the reason why we need to stop funding, like Israel, giving them $10 billion. We need to reinvest our monies in America. We need to bring back, if you want to call it liberal causes, whatever, we need to bring that money back, invest it in American children, American education, American jobs, make sure that the United States of America has a solid middle class, that the country can be very successful and a high standard of living.
And, you know, the best security for us is not the weapons, it's the people. Invest in the people. You know, they the one who make the country secure. It's not your weapons, okay? It's the people. And the thing about it, that what we need most is to make sure that we concentrate on Congress and to make sure that we have a counterpart to the Tea Party. That within 10 years, and I'm working on this idea, within 10 years, we will have at least 40% of the Congress agreeing with our goals and objective of America first and not Israel first. This is really should be our priority.
Yes, I agree 100%. You know, as an American citizen, I absolutely agree. America first. There can be no doubt about that. I don't want to see money going to Israel or Egypt or Saudi or anything
or
else.
Anyone.
It's
or
their problems. As far as I'm concerned, let them resolve it.
I tell you, Tony, our country needs our help. Our country has a deteriorating infrastructure. If you go to New York City, if you go to St. Louis, if you go to Detroit, if you go to Chicago, we have a falling apart infrastructure, and yet we are not investing in it. We need at least about $300 billion just to fix our falling apart infrastructure. We need to put a plan, you know, and it's not a one-year plan, but what we need is a five-year or seven-year plan to put America back on track. And that's why I am calling for a reorganization to challenge the way the Congress does business, the way we do our budget, you know. every year we have a budget fight. Why should we need to have a budget fight every year? When in fact, you know, we need to plan. We need to plan for 5 years, okay, to take care of issues of education, issues of infrastructure, issues of housing, you know, of many of these issues that really affect the Americans, and to train the American, retrain the American people. Before you know it, you know, we're going to be a nation of minimum wage working for McDonald's.
I agree. You know, the Obama administration, when they first took office, one of their points was to invest in infrastructure. It's been 7 years now. It seems like they just haven't been able to put it all together, obviously because the Congress keeps rejecting them. Do you give them a grade on what they did in the last 7 years?
Well, I tell you, I mean, I think that the I think that President Obama, he was a little bit shy, you know. He had, when he first won the election 7 years ago, he had the support of the majority of the Americans. And I think that at that time, within 6 months, he could have changed course in America. He could have closed Guantanamo. He could have put Wall Street out of business. He could have done so many things good for America. However, the Democratic Party and those who supported him in his venture to the White House, they are a establishment, you know, and they were not about to have a President Obama break the glass door.
Right.
So that's why the presidency stalled, and it stalled, you know, it stalled on the issue of Guantanamo, which was vetoed by the Emmanuel Ram, an Israeli citizen and a guy who chose to serve in the Israeli army than in the American army. And he was appointed the chief of staff, acting like the prime minister of America. Could you imagine that? Mm-hmm. A guy who chose to serve in the Israeli army and not in the American army become the American chief of staff.
And nobody said anything.
And nobody said anything about it.
Weird. You know, it's very weird.
This is where I think President Obama stalled. His agenda stalled not only in the Congress, but also stalled on the White House, because there were so many people beholding to the old ideas of Israel first, frankly speaking, you know?
Right. I mean, how did Emmanuel Ram, Zionist, get the job of chief of staff? How did this guy weasel his way in?
The guy chose Israel before he chose America.
End of story.
He was appointed as the White House chief of staff, which is the you know, like in the acting prime minister of any other country. Huh?
Right, right. So how does that happen? What political process went on to get that to happen?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, you have to admit that President Obama came to power with the support of the powerful Chicago Jewish community, you know? Mm-hmm. So he was beholding to them for a long time.
Right. So that was a political payback?
Yes. That was
part of the deal.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we have to admit that, huh?
Absolutely.
However, you know, like, I think that President Obama, though he, I think that he made a big mistake when he bailed out the banks. He continued with the bailout of the banks. And, you know, with Wall Street, you know that Wall Street spent $100 billion in legal fees to Wall Street lawyers to defend against the very people that they cheated.
I'm laughing because it's pathetic.
I mean, it's unbelievable. When you think about it, they spend $100 billion in legal fees to Wall Street lawyers to defend against the poor people they cheated in the subprime loan.
Yeah.
When in fact, you know, this is where President Obama made a mistake. He should have said, okay, you pay off everybody, and then we'll talk about bailout for you.
Right. Or maybe just a little jail time, not a thousand years where you belong.
It should be a jail time now. I mean, you know, like Bernie Sanders said the other day, you know, why should a guy who smoked a pot, right, or smoke a cigarette, goes to jail for 10 years when, in fact, somebody who cheated the taxpayers and the citizens out of hundreds of billions of dollars is getting a $100 million dollar in retirement bonus.
Good question, Sammy.
You know, I don't know whether you read this or not, but yesterday in the Washington Post, you know that the president of United Airlines, he resigned.
Didn't
along
see
with his top staff, because what they did is that they decided to open a special route for the head of the New York Metropolitan Airport Authority, huh? Between Newark and South Carolina. And when the guy left office, they shut down the route. So he was forced to resign. You know that he walked away with $20 million.
Whoa, that's interesting. How did that happen?
And even more interesting is that the president, the former president of Heinz Ketchup, as a bonus for his decision to shut down factories in the United States and to put 3,400 employees out of job, he got a bonus of $110 million.
Wow, that is amazing.
I mean, could you imagine that? You pay bonuses, you allow, our tax code allow companies to pay high bonuses to executive who put American out of work.
Yeah.
And then, you know, somebody like Hillary Clinton or somebody like Jeb Bush, they talk about, you know, middle class. Well, there is no middle class left.
Right. Yeah, those two really, I have no words for them.
You know, really, when you think about it, there's no middle class left. How could you have a middle class? I mean, you know, we are exporting jobs like crazy. Look at Germany and Switzerland. They continue to maintain high precision instrumentation and manufacturings, and their economy is booming. Why can't we do the same thing? Why can't we also introduce into our economy? And if we want to really, you know, we need to have a program for reindustrialization of America to bring in high precision instrumentation to our towns and cities, you know, in cities like Cleveland, in cities like Detroit, in cities like St. Louis, you know, in Gary, Indiana, those cities where the big jobs gone, okay? Bring these factories, for God's sake.
Why is that not happening? Overseas?
Because the Congress gives companies the authorization to do so, the incentive. You know that we have a tax code of 30,000 pages.
Right. That's crazy.
Could you imagine that?
That's crazy.
You need an army of lawyers and accountants and CPAs to even understand the code.
Yeah. There's no. Yeah, nobody understands it.
Why can't we have a 30, 50-page tax code? Everybody pays, you know?
Right.
Everybody pays tax, no matter what.
Yeah, I agree with you on that
flat
one.
Flat tax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think Bernie Sanders can be the guy to change that? And then if he gets elected, how does that Congress change? That's the real problem.
I really think that Bernie Sanders cannot see will transform American political landscape in a very, very good way. And it's opening the eyes of many people, okay? You know, we had the boycott Wall Street. Okay, you know the
occupation.
Yeah, Occupy Wall Street. Well, you know it fizzled out, okay, because it was concentrated on Wall Street. Well, Bernie Sanders is now addressing every issue that you and I and our neighbors think about. Okay, and I think that he is opening the eyes of many people, and that's why he is successful even in conservative states like New Hampshire and Iowa. You know, he speaks the people's language.
Well, he's one of the people, unlike Donald Trump, who actually is a billionaire, doesn't know the difference between Hamas and Hezbollah, has no idea about much, and he gives no answers except, "Don't worry, I'm going to make it great. Everybody loves me. So I called Mexicans rapists. It doesn't matter. They love me."
Well, I tell you, I mean, Donald Trump went bankrupt 6 times. And it was Wall Street that bailed his ass out. So, I mean, you know, he shouldn't talk about it, huh?
Right. Well, he talks about anything because anything he says doesn't matter because he's Donald Trump. He's a celebrity, and he's going to make America great again. And it doesn't matter if the Christian right supports him, and he's not even Christian. He does, well, you know, I eat that cookie, and I drink the wine once in a while. That's what I know. He's an idiot.
You know, I tell you, I mean, you know, when you think of such a great country like ours, you know, with so many brilliant people, how can we have a political class of this degenerate, you know, imbecile, stupid people running for high office? Why can't we have some very intelligent people? You know, someone like Bill Gates, for God's sake.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Yeah. Why not? You know, this country deserves someone like Bill Gates and, you know, Bernie Sanders.
Right.
But definitely it does not deserve somebody like Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's the political system that needs reforming badly, very badly.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And that's why, frankly speaking, I think that we need a third party. We need a third party that put the heat on the Democratic Party to be the party of the people. The Democratic Party is no different than the Republican Party in ideas and in funding and everything else.
Right. Okay? Well, Bernie Sanders is actually independent, but he feels he has to run as a Democrat to get attention, to get on the debates.
Yeah, of course. He has no choice but to do that.
Yeah. Have you considered Dr. Jill Stein?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Bernie Sanders will give Hillary Clinton the run on her money.
Yeah, I agree. The question I have for you, Sammy, is what do you think about Dr. Jill Stein? Excuse me. from the Green Party. She says, when they asked her about funding for Israel, she said, look, any country that violates human rights, no matter who they are, we will not provide aid for them, period. And she was directly talking about Israel.
Yes, I agree. I agree with her, you know, but I think that the, you know, our political system in this country, unlike the European parliamentary system, where let's say that the Green Party made a very successful inroad in politics in Germany and in Italy and in France, you know, we have a two-party system. So as such that there is really no hope for a substantial candidates or let's say a substantial electorate or a number of candidates to be in Congress on the Green Party. Maybe in the House of Representatives, but not on the presidential side. I think we don't want to make the same mistake when we supported Ralph Nader, even though that I liked Ralph Nader. And when he, you know, I think that he caused the vice president to lose the election to George Bush. Okay?
Right.
So I think that the Green Party, if they can concentrate on Congress first, you know, and then the presidency later, we can be successful in that effort.
So get members of the Green Party into Congress.
Yes.
Forget about the presidency.
This is what we need, you know. We need to do something like the Tea Party, you know? Let's not start with the presidency. Start with the mayors. Start with the state representative. Start with Congress. We need to have a third party that can give the Republicans and the Democrats a run on their money.
Agree.
A kind of a Bernie Sanders party.
Agree. Well, she says Bernie is making a mistake running as a Democrat because once the presidential election is over, then he has no path left.
I don't know about that. You know, I think, everybody would discounted Obama. You remember?
Right.
Okay. When he ran, huh?
Right. That's true.
And the big money was on Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Okay.
So you think anything's possible?
Yeah. I mean, in politics, everything is possible. Everything is possible. And I think that the American people, having suffered, okay, under the Bush administration for many years, and they are suffering now, you know, the employment is improving, but yet nobody was made whole when the subprime crisis took place. The people who lost their money did not get it back.
No.
The people who lost their money did not get it back.
Yes. Nobody, my neighbors, my family, just like everybody, your family, I'm sure,
like our IRA, okay? 70% was gone.
Right.
So nobody paid us back.
No. This is devastating.
They made the banks whole, but nobody came to us and said, okay, well, you know, you lost $100,000 here, $100,000. It was not the case.
Right, right. Well, Sammy, I want to get you back to the original conversation that we were discussing, which was AIPAC and the Iran deal. I have a question for you about that. Iran, what are they getting out of this deal? And what is the future of the Middle East as this deal takes hold and starts manifesting itself?
Well, I tell you, I think that Iran and Saudi Arabia, they have total responsibility for what's happening in the Middle East. And these two countries and these two leaders, they should meet immediately without any further delay and conclude a détente to put an end to all the suffering and all the divisions and all the sectarian wars going on, and to put an end to the war in Syria and the war in Yemen, and also the war in Iraq. And I think only these two countries and two leaders, Saudi Arabia and Iran, can do it. So Iran can, if it chooses, play a very, very significant and major role in peace and stability and prosperity in the Middle East.
And do you see that happening?
I hope so. I mean, I really hope so. I really hope that once this deal is done with, okay, that they, you know, make a arrangement to have a what I would call a Gulf state meeting, a meeting of the GCC, a summit meeting of the GCC and Iran, and meet and address between themselves all the issues and agree to put an end to all the human suffering. And, you know, more than that, they are losing billions of dollars in conflict, in wars, when, in fact, this money can be used to develop the countries.
Right. So do you think this is a possibility? Is there any signs on the horizon that the two parties are showing interest in making a deal? Or are they more interested in creating a war situation where they fight each other for dominance in the area?
You know, I tell you, I mean, you know, unfortunately, I'm hoping for a détente. I'm hoping for a summit meeting, but I don't see it happening soon. And what we need is a good leadership, you know, people who rise up to the occasion and they see the human suffering of the people of the Middle East. You know, what's happening to Syria, you know, 4 million people outside as refugees, and you can see how they are humiliated and they're dying in the seas and, you know, in the humiliated in Hungary and everywhere else. Okay. And 6 million or 8 million inside. Yemen is being destroyed. Okay, for what?
I don't know. Do you know?
Iran and Saudi Arabia will always be neighbors, for God's sake. You could not change geography. You could not change geography, but you can change politics.
Well, are you going to meet with these people and convince them, or what's going to happen here?
Well, you know, I mean, I write, I express my opinion, I express my hope that King Salman of Saudi Arabia and President Rouhani would meet, and they will call a summit. Perhaps, you know, the Hajj season is coming up, and this can be a very, very good occasion for a summit meeting of the GCC and the and Iran. And I think that within days, you will see an end to all the wars and the conflict and the suffering of the people in the Middle East, if these leaders decide that they want to do it.
Wow. So it could be a modern day Sykes-Picot 2.0 homegrown.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, you know, when you see these the suffering of the people, you say, what's going on? I mean, why, you know, what's all this about? What's all this about? Every time the Arab countries, they accumulate some funding or some, you know, money, the America, unfortunately, America and the West, they cause conflicts. And they fleece them out of their money. This is what happened in the with the Iran-Iraq war. This is what happened with the invasion of Kuwait, where $800 billion was wasted on the war. I mean, could you imagine if this money was spent on developing the infrastructure from Morocco to Yemen? The whole Middle East will be a paradise.
Right. Instead it's a wasteland.
Yeah, and instead of being wasteland.
So let me ask you a question, a final question before we go. We're yes. coming up on another minute and a half left on our show. The Iran deal. It's yes. Obviously, it's closing. It's going to pass. It's happening. The countries around the world are supporting it. The outcome, good or bad?
Absolutely, it was needed, you know, and Merkel and Cameron and Holland, they published an op page editorial in the Washington Post asking Congress to support it. And I think it's good for everybody. And I think that Iran should take the opportunity, okay, of this right here, and to put the things back on track and to open relationship with the United States.
That'd be awesome. Okay, Samuel, on that note, I want to say thank you for appearing on the Johnny Punish Show. As usual, you're an outstanding guest, a Middle East expert in Washington, D.C. Also, U.S. veteran for our listeners. Sammy is a U.S. Army veteran, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. We're so happy to have you on the Veterans Today Radio. And I want to wish you a fantastic day in Washington, D.C. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks. Yeah, okay. Thank you, Johnny. Thanks for the invitation. Thanks, Sam. And all the best.
Good day, America. From the deserts to the sea, from the mountains to the snow, this concludes today's Johnny Punish Show. Produced by the Veterans Today Network and VTN Radio. Brought to you by HireVeterans.com, America's job board for U.S. veterans. I'm your host, Johnny Punish, wishing you an amazing day. Until we meet again!
I spent all my years fighting for a place in the sun.